Welcome to the Adopting and Fostering Home podcast. Whether your family has been on this journey for years or you're just getting started, we're here to support and encourage you along the way. And now your hosts, Lynette Ezell and Tara Melber.
Welcome back to the Adopting and Fostering Home podcast. Tara and I have a really special couple with us today, Kelly and Kayla Billingsley. And you know, Tara, when I think of this couple, whom I've known a very long time, I think of the parable in Luke 18, where Jesus teaches about the Pharisee and the tax collector. Now, I know this sounds a little odd, but hang with me. The Pharisee stands and prays to God from a posture of self-righteousness and arrogancy. He felt that he brought much to God's table. You know, he tithed, he fasted two times a week, he worked hard in the temple of God. He was a poster boy for righteousness, right? But the tax collector bowed his head before God in shame. He cried out, broken before the Lord, seeking God's mercy. The tax collector got it.
Yes.
He realized that his total dependency was on God, that he came before God empty-handed and totally reliant upon the Lord for mercy, for forgiveness, for direction. Then in Luke 18, 14, Jesus ends the parable with this: "For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, but the one who humbles himself will be exalted."
And right after that, in 15 through 17, it says, "People were also bringing babies to Jesus for him to place his hands on them. But when the disciples saw this, they rebuked them. But Jesus called the children to him and said, 'Let the little children come to me and do not hinder them, for the kingdom of God belongs to such as these. Truly, I tell you, anyone who will not receive the kingdom of God like a little child will never enter it.'"
This is fascinating because right after the lesson on humility and total dependence on God, Luke goes directly to this passage here, to Jesus and the little children. And it's so fascinating because Jesus' attitude toward children completely contrasted with that of the religious leaders at that time. In most ancient cultures, children were a burden until they were able to contribute to the family and to society. But Jesus turns the tables on this teaching by saying, "Let the children come to me," just as you read, "and do not hinder them." The Message paraphrases verse 16 by saying, "These children are the kingdom's pride and joy."
I love that.
I do too. So today on the podcast, we want to welcome Kelly and Kayla Billingsley. And Kelly and Caleb have three children. You two are so talented. Caleb, just your experiences in the military, the police department, the education you two have, you could have easily taken the attitude, like in Luke 18, that fostering is beneath us.
But we really just want to know, why did you start the process? Why did you decide to become foster parents?
Well, I mean, I think going all the way back, Kelly and I think both, before we even met each other, we had a desire for adoption. At least I know I did. And I remember talking with Kelly at the very beginning of our relationship, that that's something that we would want to do at some point. We didn't know anything about that, really, what that would look like. But even, you know, before we were married, I just knew that there were all kinds of kids in the world who needed parents, who needed decent parents. And so I just felt like as a Christian, that was just kind of like, it just made sense that I would do that. And I was wondering why more people didn't do it that I knew.
Right.
And so that was just always been a desire of mine as far back as I can, like just even in high school, I remember thinking those thoughts. I don't really know why. I can't pinpoint as to like when that started or, or what brought that about.
Right.
It was more of just kind of like assumption for me that we would, I was just something I would be involved in.
Yeah. I had the same, I had the same kind of desires. And so early in our marriage, we talked about it a lot and we sort of dreamed about it and what would adoption look like for us. And then just down the road, a lot of things change and just circumstantial things that it just wasn't ever the right time to jump in and start that process. And I can see now that was the Lord kind of working to change our hearts a little more towards foster care and serving those hurting families in our community. For me, Caleb was working at a children's home here with a lot of foster youth. And so just kind of seeing him work with those kids made me have a little more compassion for the kids who are like orphans of the living, I guess. Mm-hmm. They had parents, but it wasn't safe for them to be living with them. And these are children right in our community, literally our neighbors.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Every community has it. That's right.
There's a huge need.
There is a huge need.
Well, I think with foster care, I mean, it was one of those things where I personally, whenever I thought about it in the past, it was always like, nah, you know, we're not going to foster care. We're going to adopt, you know,
right.
Kind of like, I don't know, you kind of just, mm-hmm. at least in my mind, I kind of put adoption on this pedestal of, you know, I want my own kids, right?
Yeah, right.
But after working at this place called Cunningham Children's Home here in Urbana for a number of years, I worked with a lot of foster kids, and just seeing how normal they were in one sense, but also how broken they were at mm-hmm. the same time, mm-hmm. it just made it much more tangible and feasible for me in my mind to say, okay, foster care is a real, first of all, there's a huge need that I wasn't mm-hmm. even aware of. But then also it's very doable as well. So, mm-hmm.
So did you all have all three of your biological children when you started the foster care process?
We did. Ezra was a baby. I think he had just turned one when we started the process. And by the time we went through all of the trainings and actually received our license, he was about to turn two. And then very shortly after we received our license, we got our call for our first placement. So,
and that was a sibling group, right?
Yep, and that was a sibling group. Yep. Ezra, it was the weekend of Ezra's second birthday. And it was for a sibling group of two, a boy who was two and a baby girl who was about 8 months old, I think, right?
That was a busy house.
Yeah.
Five little people.
It was. So jumping from three to five kids when the youngest three are two and almost one was
right.
Definitely, it kind of rocked our world a little bit. Right,
yeah,
right off the bat.
That first year was probably the healthy year of our marriage, I would say.
Oh, definitely.
Mm. Did you have a lot of community, church, and family support when you all decided to start fostering? Because that's a lot of little kids. You all needed help, I'm sure.
Yes. Yeah, we did. I think that's another reason we felt so, it felt so natural for us to just go ahead and jump in and do it, is because we both have great supportive families. They don't live near us. Our families are located a few hours away, but our church family is so great and supportive. We couldn't have even done the training without
right.
volunteers from our church coming to watch our kids and mm-hmm. making sure we got to those classes. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah, we have a great church community here.
So, Kelly, how long did you all have the sibling group?
We had them for a year, and then they were reunified. And then they ended up coming back to our house just a couple of months later. I think less than 3 months, around three
Golly.
Months. They came back to our house, and then we had them again for another 9 to 10 months,
oh,
about.
Wow.
So we had them
about
2 years total.
And then they were reunified with biological family?
They were twice.
Wow. Man.
Yep.
I'm sure that had to be very difficult for you guys.
It was. Yes. It was incredibly difficult the second time.
Mm-hmm.
It felt a little worse. Just a lot of weird things happened in that case, and it just changed at the last minute. And so it sort of felt like the rug was kind of pulled out from under our feet. But ultimately, I think it was fine. The last we heard that it was a good update and they're doing well. So,
oh, that's fantastic.
It worked out.
How did Nella and Silas and Ezra, how did they react to the kids coming in the second time? Like, or any part of that you want to share, but they had to have,
mm-hmm.
you know, they had to have been affected by this because I'm sure they bonded with the kids. They were their playmates.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The second time they came back, I think all of the kids, all five of them, adjusted really quickly. It felt way more natural the second time when they moved back in with us than the first time. The first time, I would say it was kind of strange for them, but they adjusted so quickly. I think our kids are very quick to love unconditionally, and mm-hmm. that's great to watch. There were certainly some negatives.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's, I mean, obviously you're going to have conflict over, you right. know, toys and tension. We definitely saw that, you know, especially yeah. with our two biological boys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one was the same age as the boy foster kid, and the other, our older boy, was just a couple of years older than that. And mm-hmm. so, you know, they're all sharing a room. And, you know, he's coming in and taking all their stuff and wearing their clothes. And
right.
So it's just, it's, you know, can you have a lot of just the natural conflict over kind of stuff, material things. But then also you do notice, you know, like anxiety at times and, mm-hmm. and just wondering, like, what is this kid doing here? And, you know, do mom and dad still love me? You know, mm-hmm. kind of though they never say that, but you can say. Definitely. And then, but also just, they ask good, our kids ask good questions, you know, like, why are they here? And
right.
we got many opportunities to talk about, like, why are we doing foster care? And so that became a natural thing for our kids to know, like, well, they're here because, you know, they couldn't stay with their mom and dad. It wasn't mm-hmm. safe for them. And so we're going to take care of them for a while until their mom and dad and can get better and they can go back home, you know? And so our kids just, they see foster care as that. And so that's
a very practical mm-hmm. service.
Well, it's family ministry. Mm-hmm. I mean, it truly is.
Yeah.
So I know your second placement was vastly different. And so I'm just dying for you to share about this one.
our second placement was something we thought we would maybe do, like, as our other kids were much, much older or even out of the house. But mm-hmm. A few months after our first placement was reunified for the second time for good, we got a call for a pregnant teen, a 16-year-old girl mm-hmm. who was about 36 weeks pregnant, needing a home. They really wanted some place where there was a mom who was in the home all the time.
Mm-hmm.
They saw that that would be beneficial for her. She was keeping her baby and mm-hmm. wanted to learn how to be a mom. That's pretty much all the information we had mm-hmm. on the phone. And that she's so great. And you know, they kind of tell you things to twist you into taking, but anyhow, so I got this call and I didn't really know what to do with it, but I hung up the phone saying, and I don't know why I was even saying this, but I was like, you let me think about it. When, I mean, maybe I should have said no, I don't know. We don't regret this placement, but it was very different. And so I ended up calling Caleb and talking to him, and he said, yeah, we should do it.
That's funny.
So we did. I called him back, and they brought her over a couple of days later, I think. And she really was.
So how did that transition go?
It went better than I was expecting. I was expecting it to be completely awkward. It really wasn't. She genuinely seemed glad to be able to live in our house and kind of, you know, move in and get to be a part of our family for a little while. I think she's desperate for, I think, from a mom and a dad figure, something mm-hmm. she's never had. And so that, I think, went well. The kids loved her. I mean, she paid attention to them. She liked that they were nice to her. I think she had just never really lived anywhere that felt like a normal family
mm-hmm.
setup in her whole life. So that was really different for her.
The first day that she got here, she told us about a couple of the placements that she had come from, and
horrific.
Yeah, they just sounded awful. Like, she just,
wow.
It was clear that, I mean, she ran away from them, and it was clear that was because she did not feel safe. People there, like, were really trying to hurt her mm-hmm. in very disgusting ways, and that they're just, the homes were dirty and unclean, and you know. And so I think when she got to our house, I think she was relieved, honestly. You could just sense that that, like, okay, this is a somewhat normal family,
right.
You know,
right.
I have a room that's clean and
her own
space. And so that was, you could really sense her. She was really genuinely thankful.
But these placements that she was at were foster, licensed foster families through your state.
Yes.
Yes. Yep. Yeah.
That makes me sad.
Yeah. Yeah. It makes us sad too. We did later find out there were investigations happening.
Yeah.
And I think maybe one of the homes lost their license or at least was suspended or something.
So she had her baby while she was there with you guys. Is that right?
She did.
She had it when I was here.
she had the baby when she was home.
Oh, my God.
And I was in Indianapolis running a half marathon. She literally had the baby while I was running a race.
Goodness.
I thought, oh, she's got a few weeks to go. It's going to be fine. My mom came up and told me to go.
So Kelly's mom was in town because I work. You know, I'm a police officer, and at the time I worked noon to 10.
Uh-huh.
And so I don't remember what day this was of the week, but I went to work. I got home a little after 10, and all the kids are in bed, and Kelly's mom is in bed, and I get in bed. I'm just getting ready to fall asleep, and all of a sudden I hear somebody going to the bathroom, which is right outside our bedroom, and I hear some strange noises.
Oh, my
word. And then all of a sudden there's a knock on the bedroom door, and it's the teenager, and she says, I think my water just broke.
Oh, Kaylee. Oh, Kelly, I'm glad your mom was there. Yeah.
Yes, me too.
Yeah, so I wake up Kelly's mom, I think she had woke up by this time. Uh-huh. So anyway, long story short, I end up taking her to the hospital. It was pretty awkward, to say the least. You know, I barely know this girl. She'd been here for like 3 weeks or something.
Yeah, I think it was right around 3 weeks.
It was so awkward. And so take her to the hospital. I get her room, get her settled in. You know, I try to make it as, you know, not as little, least awkward as possible for her. The nurses are asking questions. I have no idea. I don't know the answers to any of these questions, you know, like medical things or whatever. And so, but she had some friends that ended up coming to the hospital. And so I didn't have to stay there very long, you know, and so she was in good hands with the nurses and everything. And so, came home, and then she had her baby the next day.
Yeah. That morning,
that next morning sometime. It was several hours later, but, yeah, it was, of course, the weekend that Kelly's out of town.
So now you find yourself doing your third placement, and you're doing a special needs placement.
Yeah. Well, so let's see. Pick him up at the end of July here, and it was exactly a week after the teenager and her baby moved out. They were able to move into a, what is it called? The transitional living program,
yes, yes.
Which we thought was a really good fit for her. And we were really glad that she was able to do that. And we were hoping to maybe take a little break, but we got a week break. And I guess that was good enough. So we picked up this little boy, and he is 2, and he has special medical needs. He has epilepsy and was having very bad seizures pretty constantly for about 2 months. I feel like he's just recently been stable, but his neurologist was able to get his medicine correct. And so we're kind of just now getting to know him, because for the first time since we've had him, he is coherent most of the day instead of having back-to-back seizures. So he requires a lot of care and a lot of attention, but he's a pretty sweet kid. And for the most part, we really like having him here.
He's very difficult. Delayed. He's very delayed in development, of course. And so he just learned how to walk when he came to us.
Yeah.
I mean, he's made huge progress in that. And so, I mean, he's a great walker now. He's climbing on stuff and doing things that we never thought he would do this quickly, for sure. He knows almost no words, you know. I mean, he says about 4 or 5 words, but not really in the right context. So we're not really sure where he's at with talking right now. And so communication's tough.
He has learned some signs. We've been trying signing with him, and he's picked up on those pretty quick, I think. So we know he is capable. He's just going to need some work, but he's already made great progress.
Yeah.
That's
amazing. I think it helps having the big kids here to play with him. And and also he's just in an environment where he can kind of be a normal toddler and explore. And he wasn't before. So I don't think he had a lot of opportunity to just be a normal kid.
Right. Well, as Caleb, you mentioned earlier that the first year that you all were fostering was probably the hardest on your marriage. So as you're fostering, and we often talk about wraparound care and self-care and just really taking care of your marriage and your family so that you can be healthy in all aspects to be able to continue on this journey and do it well. So as you guys think about that, what kinds of things do you do to help protect your marriage and to really make sure that your biological kids are being able to express how they're feeling about things? Or how do you take care of your family through this?
Yeah, I feel like there's a lot of things, like just practical things to do. I think one of the biggest things, though, to just have in place as Christians is you've just got to be involved in gospel preaching, gospel-centered church. That's huge. For all the practical reasons, you know, for the extra help, for the babysitting, for the encouragement, but also just for the regular gospel preaching, to be reminded of the most important things. Because that's when I would get discouraged, or when I would get angry, or begin to question things, is when I lose focus of why we are doing it, you know? If the gospel isn't my motivation, then any other motivation I have is going to dwindle very quickly.
That's true.
Things get hard. So to be a part of a church and to be surrounded by people who regularly remind one another of the gospel and how to actually live it out, like, that's just huge for people involved in foster care or adoption or anything, because, you know, it's not like on TV. Like one breakthrough and everyone just fairy tale, right? And so it's just, it's constant daily struggle. So if the gospel isn't central, then you can easily get discouraged. Beyond that, I would just say just communicating with your spouse. How to be able to talk about thinking, what you're thinking, what you're afraid of, what makes you angry. You've got to be able to laugh together and be silly, and I don't know, you've got to be vulnerable with your spouse, because if you aren't talking about these things, they just get bottled up, and you begin to just kind of put your head down and just power through life rather than actually seeking the joy of the Lord and the joy of your spouse in the midst of it. And so that'll drive you away from each other rather than toward one another. So
that's
that was
fantastic.
Huge.
That's great.
Yeah. Yeah. I have very similar thoughts to Caleb, as Caleb, on that. I mean, nothing will make you realize your own sin, I think, than doing something like foster care.
That's true.
It certainly requires constant preaching to yourself. And so, yeah, it makes the gospel come alive in a new way. That is for sure.
What would you say to a family that's beginning this process, or they're thinking about stepping into the waters of foster care or adoption, or opening their home to a teenager like you did, or a sibling group, or special needs fostering? What would be your advice for those just beginning the process?
Well, I think maybe one of the first things would be for them to talk with people who are involved in it. In order to really know, to get a better understanding of what it's really like.
Right.
Yeah.
Because I don't think foster care is for everybody. Now, I want to be careful in saying that, because I do think more people need to do it.
Right. Absolutely.
I don't want to scare people away. I want to say, if you're thinking about doing it, then please do it, because there's so many kids that need good homes. But, you know, if you're going to do it wisely, and you should, then you should talk to other people who are involved in it to get a good idea of what it's really like.
Yeah.
And then beyond that is, you know, just, and asking the Lord to prepare your heart, asking the Lord to give you love for others so that you can love these kids that come into your home. Cause that's been the hardest thing for me, honestly. And that's been the most revealing thing for me, is that I thought I was like this person who would be, I just said, I'm so good. I'm such a good person that I would just be able to love these kids unconditionally right off the bat. And I would, you know, I wouldn't have any issues with that, but that is not true.
Join the club.
Yeah. And so it's very hard to love kids that aren't quote unquote your own. And so it's much harder than I thought it would be for me. And so that's something that the Lord has really been teaching me. And I'm not there, but I'm hopefully in process of, and Kelly too, I think would say that that's something that we just have to always grow in. And so, yeah. So that's why I say to talk to people who are involved in it, to just get those colored glasses off.
We did not do that.
No,
we knew nobody else in our town that was a licensed foster family. So we just kind of blindly signed up for the training and jumped right in, which is good because now we can be the people that hopefully other people will talk to. And
absolutely.
I do wish we would have had maybe a better, more accurate picture of what it really looks like day in and day out. I personally don't think the training classes really prepare you for everything. There's no way that they could, but that would be helpful. Mm-hmm. Just getting true stories from foster families.
Well, and I really don't know how families do it if they're not involved in church and, you know, have a strong community around them. I hear you all talking about that. And what's one of the greatest ways you've been helped as a foster family?
I can think of a lot, and they're all just very simple, practical things, but they help so much. So many people from our church have just watched our kids, not just in the training process, but beyond, you know, they'll watch all of them. When you have five kids ages six and under, you're not really invited to a lot of dinner parties. You know, it's a wild time. But we had people that would just invite our whole family over and not make a big deal about the utter chaos that entered their home when we arrived. And it absolutely was chaos. So we were kind of just a hot mess that whole first year. But we had people babysit for us. People stop by with dinner. They would bring our groceries. I think we had a family from our church just force us to send them our grocery list, and then they bought all of our groceries.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Just simple things. My friends would stop by with iced coffee in the morning.
That's your love language. I know you, girl. Yeah.
It really is.
It is.
It just makes you feel cared for. It gives you a little boost of, I can do this because I'm not doing it alone, really, in a sense. But.
Yeah, the one thing I would add to that is just, you have all those practical things, which are huge.
Yeah.
But one other thing that I think our church has been so good at with our foster kids is just the other people in our church, especially the men in our church who have befriended kids. And so, you know, you have these foster, our biological children, when you ask them who their friends are, they're going to be the friends. They're our friends. Adult friends, you know, they think of everyone in our church as their friends. And so when we have these foster kids coming in, they're just welcomed into the church. You have grown men in our church befriending them and playing with them and taking them out. And I mean, just doing stuff with them that is just, it was huge. Mm-hmm. And so like, you know, it's just to see these, I'm thinking primarily of the little boy that we had in our first placement. He loved going to church. He loved his friends at church. Yeah. They were his friends. And so that was just huge. And so, you know, if people are listening to this and they're not foster parents yet, but they want to be involved, man, find a foster family in your church and befriend those kids.
Oh, that's great.
And that's a huge blessing to the foster parents. It just makes transition so much easier and smoother. and it helps the kids settle in and get to know people. It's just, it's a huge blessing. And it's the gospel made visible, really, in the church. So
that is great. Great advice.
A body of believers is so important. That is for sure. And like you said, Caleb, that, you know, if what we're doing is not gospel centered and we're not doing it out of obedience to the Lord, then we will quickly fade away. But the body can come around and wrap around foster families, or you can be a foster family. But everyone may not be called to be the actual foster parents, but everyone can do something for sure. Yeah. And some of the things I'm hearing you saying about, you know, families inviting your entire chaotic hot mess family over just to keep you from feeling so isolated or that you're not on an island, just to have somebody bring you an iced coffee. Like, I'm not forgotten, even though I haven't left my house and not changed out of my pajamas in 3 days. So those kinds of things, because I know, Caleb, that's what you do.
So, you know me so well.
Yeah, yeah. So those things. But I really even love too, Caleb, what you're saying is that it's not just women who are jumping in to help.
Right.
But that men, godly men, being a godly male role model in these boys' lives, aside from just you as their foster dad. And then, you know, who knows what's going to happen with these kids? They're at a church where they feel loved and cherished and they see healthy relationships. And whether they stay with you for a short term or a long term, they've seen the gospel in action and it will impact their life forever. We have to believe that to be true.
Definitely.
Thanks, guys, for joining us today. We are so grateful, and you just can't imagine what a blessing you're going to be to others, and we appreciate your transparency and your willingness to share your story.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
You've been listening to the Adopting and Fostering Home podcast, a ministry of the North American Mission Board and funded through the Cooperative Program. This month and through the end of the year, we would like to ask you to consider giving to the Minister's Adoption Fund. This fund provides grants to Southern Baptist ministers and missionaries who are adopting. By giving financially, you are able to be a part of seeing many children become beloved sons and daughters. For more information, visit sinrelief.org.